Broadcasting from the studios of Business Radio X, it's time for Privacy Cafe. This show is brought to you by Hall Booth Smith, guiding clients through the intricate landscape of data privacy law. Now, here are your hosts.
Hi, this is Richard Shanis in the Charlotte office of Hall Booth Smith. I'm here today with my colleague, Jay Davis, in our Tampa office. We are the leaders of the Hall Booth Smith Data Privacy, Security, and Technology Group. And we are glad to be here for our next episode of Privacy Cafe. Today, we are going to talk about what seemingly everyone in the technology field wants to talk about these days, and that is artificial intelligence. We won't be talking about it too much from a technology viewpoint, but we will talk about the laws in artificial intelligence, what's developing, and what we expect to come. So to start us off, Jade, we know that just recently, earlier this month, in fact, the European Union Artificial Intelligence Act was officially passed, and the EU seems to be a leader in this area. So let's tell people a little bit about the EU AI Act, that's a mouthful, and what it means, especially for us here in the United States.
Absolutely. It was actually 2 weeks ago. So a brief rundown, it is the world's first comprehensive legal framework, and it goes into effect in stages over the next 3 years. So not a complete mouthful in the beginning. The EU AI Act will apply to businesses operating within the EU and to any AI developers or creators whose AI systems are being used in EU countries. It also regulates AI based on levels of risk. The levels are unacceptable, high risk, limited risk, and minimal or no risk. Thankfully, the act really focuses on high risk and completely obliterates use of unacceptable risk-based systems. The way that the act defines high risk is systems that are those with potential to negatively affect the safety and rights of individuals. So we have that same theme of protecting the rights of consumers. The use and development of these systems will still be highly regulated by the act, and it dovetails between industries such as law enforcement and education, where those will more than likely be the higher risk posited towards individuals. There is a category regarding minimal or no risk, just to explain to people what that is, because that's something that I think everyone is more over privy to. But that's the AI that people are using in video games or spam filters. It's fully permitted, so we can rest assured that we'll have our spam filters, Photoshop, and anything else that we like to do. Once it encroaches into a deep fake, and not just prettying your photographs, that's when we get into a higher risk category. A lot of people have been talking about the act and, okay, this is great, we have movement, but what does it mean for people in the US? And that's really our focus and what our clients want to know primarily. Much of the obligations of the act, like we talked about, are for providers or developers of AI, but it's also for those who intend on using it or deploying it. So I think the focus of our discussion today is if you have someone who is deploying or actually developing it, you certainly want to look at the act. But if you're utilizing as well, you need to bring focus to it. A lot of organizations, for example, they will use a third-party AI system. And oftentimes they're not quite sure where it's deployed from. So that's important as well, because you may not even realize that you're utilizing it in the EU. And if you market or provide services within the EU using AI, it's also applicable. Much of today's marketing uses AI. So I think that it's going to really make a broader impact more than what a lot of people assume that it does not make.
Jade, one of the things that we saw when we think back to the GDPR is it was only in 2018 when the GDPR became effective in the EU. And following that, so many countries around the world seemed to follow suit and either adopted their own, I'll call it equivalent of GDPR, their own national data privacy laws, or if it wasn't identical to the GDPR, it followed a lot of the precepts and principles of the GDPR. Do you think we'll see something like that again now that the EU, as they did with the GDPR, they are really the first country to adopt a national law, the EU is obviously several nations, but a federal type law that really covers the entire AI space. So what do we expect to see from the rest of the world?
Well, I know, for example, Brazil, they have a draft AI law, and it's been going in, 3 years now, installed, and then, back onward. So I think we're going to see the same trend. There's also movement, in China, they have a draft regulation. They want to make sure that their generative AI reflects socialist core values. So I think that we're going to have the same adoption globally, but it'll just be piecemealed, and it may follow the structure of the EU AI Act to a certain extent and then have their own customizations for that particular country.
And that might be a good segue into talking about what happens with other countries around the world, and let's bring it home right here to the United States. We know that so far, we do not have a federal comprehensive data privacy law that addresses all aspects of data privacy, similar to the GDPR. We have industry-focused laws like HIPAA, Graham, Leach, Bliley, but the United States and our Congress has not seen fit to adopt a data privacy law that would affect all industries, regardless of the size of the company, regardless of their revenue, that type of thing. So do we think we will see something in the United States that could mirror what the EU AI Act says?
Maybe, but who knows when we get there? What have you seen so far in the U.S. legislative landscape?
Yeah, so what I see, very similar to what we're seeing in data privacy, is it's really going state by state. So as I just said, we've not had in the United States a federal type data privacy law for all industries. I am very skeptical that we would see anything like an EU AI Act here in the U.S. on a federal level. Really, the whole approach in the U.S. seems to be so different than the EU. Plus, I'll add, I get on my soapbox every once in a while. I don't see Congress getting off their collective behinds to pass a law like this. So I think we're back where we are with data privacy, which is each state will individually pass whatever AI type law they think will be appropriate. We've seen that, as I said, in data privacy. It started in California. And then in 2023, I think we had another four states whose data privacy laws went into effect. And now in 2024, we have more going into effect and more being passed by state legislatures. So as far as artificial intelligence laws, we do have I think the count is six states where we have one type or another of artificial intelligence legislation. But the focus is really very different than what they're doing in the EU. Mm-hmm. The biggest focus here in the United States is on, I'll put it in two buckets. One is in the employment realm, and the second bucket is dealing with bias. So, for example, in New Jersey. The law specifically addresses the use of AI for employment decisions. And under the New Jersey law, they call it the Automated Employment Decision Tool. And any company that's using one of these types of tools to screen candidates for employment decisions has to notify the candidates within 30 days of the use of the tool. Mm-hmm. So it's in the employment field. Virginia, again, it's notification.
I see bias in Virginia. That was one of the the huge points.
They talk about bias, and it's really when it's used for some type of consequential decision. Florida, they're very big on transparency. And if an AI type program is used, there has to be a statement on the company's internet homepage if they're using an AI program for a chat bot or audio or video, something like that. So transparency is also very big. New York is another one with some notification requirements when AI programs are used for employment decisions. California, they address both the developer of AI programs and the term that they have also used is deployer. So the deployer is simply the company that might deploy or use the particular AI program.
I was really interested in Oklahoma. They also had the algorithmic bias legislation. They include some Bill of Rights and Citizens Bill of Rights, but they also have a Utilization Review Act. And that really ties into all the problems we're seeing regarding denials from AI systems used regarding that utilization review in healthcare. A lot of insurance companies will make clinical decisions or provide, you know, approvals or denials based on algorithms and data inputs. And some of those data inputs are arguably biased or they're improper. Or they haven't been vetted enough. The inputs need to have further auditing. One of the key excerpts that really stood out to me, it basically mandates that a specialist who participates in a utilization review process for an insurer that uses AI-based algorithms, they have to open the document of the utilization review. They have to open the individual's clinical records or their data prior to making a decision. And that stems from some legislation we've seen, but I wonder how many other states will adopt the same, or if we may get a piecemealed approach nationally regarding utilization review.
I think it'll just be some states will do that type of thing, some will not. Some of them will require things like California, where there has to be a governance program that has administrative, technical safeguards before it's used. They want to make sure that there's not, as the term they use is, algorithmic discrimination associated with the use of the AI. So again, what is so difficult for businesses is business, you know, a company that does business across a number of states, they have to make sure that they comply with each state in which they do business that has an AI law similar to data privacy. So it's just another thing that unfortunately I think will tremendously increase the cost of doing business. And there does not seem to be any real consideration for that. I think the takeaway from the various state legislation is before implementing one of these programs, again, that's not necessarily developing them, but just deploying or using them, know what your state law is. Know what's on the table, what's coming down the road, just like you want to know your data privacy. But one big difference I'm seeing between these laws, the AI laws and the data privacy laws, the state data privacy laws generally have a minimum requirement, so to speak. They'll only apply to companies that have either a certain minimum revenue, such as California, where they say, you know, at least $25 million annually, or that process the data of a certain number of people in the state in a year. Usually that number is 100,000 people. So the threshold, a lot of companies will not hit those thresholds. Data privacy laws will not apply. But I'm not seeing those types of thresholds in the AI laws. So it's really regardless of what size you are, if you're using these programs in these states, you need to know what you have to do to comply.
Exactly. And then if you are in business across the nation, you need to make sure you approach it in a broader aspect. And we've done that as it relates to data privacy for our clients. Let's go into the applications, because that's really, you know, the nut of what everyone wants to talk about. And these publicly available applications that are driven by generative artificial intelligence, those are the buzzwords. So we've got ChatGPT, Google's Bard, Microsoft Bing. There are image generators such as DALL-E 2, Midjourney. There's a lot of talk about Sora and how it's going to affect the film industry. And so all of these are really impressive. They're wildly popular. People are using these with the knowledge of the employer and without the knowledge of their employer. And, you know, we know that they're offering these attractive ways to become more efficient, to impress our clients, our bosses, but we really have to be careful how we use them. We have to keep in mind the security, accuracy, and really protecting the company's IP. I'm just going to say, in our practice, we've created a lot of AUPs, acceptable use policies, and I think we should go through some of the do's and don'ts as it relates to using AI, and just some tips for companies to keep in mind. And if you don't have any use policy, this is the time to do it.
Yeah, I think a key term that you mentioned, Jade, is generative AI, which simply means that the program is generating some type of work product for you. And the issue there, where you want to have a policy around and get some guardrails around it, is those programs frequently involve having to provide information to the program in order for the AI program, the ChatGPT, et cetera, to generate the work product. And so the concern is, what information is being put into the AI program? For example, if the company is a hospital or healthcare provider, of course, they have a large amount of protected health information, and that is protected by HIPAA. So what are the HIPAA rules that would affect information provided to the AI program, and why we want to have some policies that tell employees what they can or cannot do as far as what they upload? And maybe it's not patient or customer information, but what if it's a company that uses generative AI to develop a marketing program? But to get the marketing program, maybe you have to put in a lot of company proprietary and confidential information. What is the AI program then doing with that information once you upload it?
Absolutely. And you also could be working with vendors that have entrusted their information to you under a confidentiality agreement or clause in your agreement, and you're bound by that confidentiality, but Susan could be down the hall and putting all of that vendor's information in the program.
Right. So not only are there those disclosure issues, but then once the AI program has it, what are they doing with it? We know the way these programs work is that they gobble up data to have more information to learn from and to generate better product. So is the information that I might upload to an AI program then using my information to better their program or generate product for potentially their other customers or clients. So that's a key area where policies definitely help and tell employees what they can or cannot do with regard to generative AI. What are some other guardrails that we might want to put up, Jade?
I definitely think that falling back in line with the state legislation we just discussed, we want to make sure that employment decisions about applicants are not being made based off of programs, so we're not breaking laws. That goes down to retention, promotions, transfers. You know, you can key in certain coding if you have a wide group of individuals, and you may do that on the first run, but then there needs to be that human touch from a subjective and an objective standpoint to review that information to make sure that it's not just spit out by the system. I'd also say another one would be not to keep certain information or not to input certain confidential information in the system that you know relates to a specific project that you're bound by contractually. You don't want to, you know, disclose trade secrets. I believe Samsung had that problem a year ago where they immediately curtailed use. They may have employed AI again, but they've done it in a tailored standpoint and under a use policy. And that's why I think utilizing programs such as OpenAI, doing customized data inputs, that's another tip because you can control it as a company, what you set up. And then you can also monitor those inputs as well.
Yeah, the quality control, I think, that you mentioned is very important. Really on an ongoing basis, that whatever product comes back, especially if it's in a critical area, that it is in fact good information. We've seen some things, you know, Google has been in the news recently with some of their AI product and bias, and was it intentional bias? Was it not intentional bias? Things like that. So it's important also, some of these state laws that we talked about, you have to be sure there's no bias. Mm-hmm. So what might be required is having people with the requisite AI training and knowledge to be able to evaluate these products, number one. And then number two, when results are received or deliverables are received, being able to evaluate the accuracy. So there might be some special training involved there as well.
Another area I think that is not talked about enough is regarding uploading someone's likeness to a generative AI tool, especially if you don't have the rights to that person's likeness via contract or the purpose of it. And then also you may discontinue using likeness in content, whether it's marketing or however you're using it. Let's say that individual's contract terms, or you're no longer using the program. Who knows then what that program is putting that person's likeness on? So that's a huge issue as well. And I've seen, you know, news reports regarding people opening applications and seeing themselves in programs that they never utilized.
Yeah, and even with voice and chatbots, that type of thing, it's become, I think, fairly easy for AI programs to use just, I've read 3 to 5 words of someone's voice to create any conversation using that person's voice. So from the security side for companies, we've been training people to look for phishing emails or vishing or smishing and all of that type of social engineering attacks. But now you have to look out for it on phone calls, both on a company and a personal level. Unfortunately, while AI does great things helping us do business, the bad guys take advantage of AI as well, making business security that much more challenging.
Yeah, and I think, you know, just wrapping this up a little bit, One of the answers would be to complete an approved list from the company that lists the actual tools that you can use. One benefit of that, obviously, is you can control what people are doing, but also you have the ability to audit what people are using. And then you can do searches within your system to ascertain if someone's using something that's not on the list, whether that's, you know, different keywords that you search or rules that you set up on your company server or in your cloud infrastructure. Because I think, you know, some employees may not even think of it. They may not even know they're actually using AI if it's not abrupt or labeled. And then training, that's another component.
And that's especially important in places like California, where they're saying you have to have documented safeguards. How could you have those documented safeguards if you don't know people are going rogue, so to speak, not in a bad way or malicious way, but they're just using these programs, like you said, and maybe they don't even know what the rules and regulations are for doing so.
Yeah, I've actually also seen companies double down in their acceptable use policies. There are violation clauses so that if it's violated, you could end up getting disciplinary action, whether it's going to be immediate termination, depending on what you're doing or on a particular plan. But those are certainly things that you can insert, even if you don't plan on executing it completely, it can serve as a deterrent for the employees.
Right. Yeah. So, well, thank you, Jade. I have greatly enjoyed our conversation about artificial intelligence today. Hopefully we've provided some information that will let the listeners just get a little better idea of how they can use AI, how they can protect their company and make it a benefit and not a detriment that will get them in trouble.
Absolutely. That's it for today. Join us on our next edition of Privacy Cafe. In the meantime, we'd love to hear from you. If you have questions or want to talk about anything privacy or security related, email us at privacycafe@hallboothsmith.com. For my co-host, Rich Shanus, I'm Jade Davis. Join us next time on Privacy Cafe.
Thank you for joining us on Privacy Cafe. This show is underwritten by Hall Booth Smith, helping clients navigate the ever-changing world of data privacy and cybersecurity. For more information, go to hallboothsmith.com.
Privacy Cafe is a production brought to you by Hall Booth Smith PC. This podcast is published for the purpose of providing general information and education on topics, which includes those related to the law and legal issues. But the contents of the podcast do not constitute legal advice. Listening to this podcast or utilizing the information contained in it in any way does not constitute, nor does it create, an attorney-client relationship between you and Hall Booth Smith or its lawyers. The contents of this podcast should not be used as a substitute for competent legal advice from a professional attorney licensed in your jurisdiction.